Before we get started, I want to let you know some of the folks who have made it possible. Indian Mountain ATV Park, located at 11620 County Road 8, Piedmont, Alabama. Crossroads Farm and Nursery. Whether you're a seasoned landscaper, garden center, or a DIY homeowner, Crossroads Farm and Nursery is your place for everything from azaleas to zebragrass and everything in between. Superlime Plus, who offers an all-natural liquid lime that goes to work immediately to raise the pH of your soil for better hay and crop production with less weeds. And the Jefferson County Cattlemen's Association, who is hosting their third annual Pro Rodeo at Hallmark Farm on Friday night, April 25th, and Saturday night, April 26th. Gates open at 5 p.m., the pre-show starts at 6:30 with mutton busting for kids, and the show starts at 7 p.m. Link to all these sponsors are located in the show description. Now, it's time for some storytelling. And I thought, man, this is bad. This is not, I'm going to get wore out when I get home, may take my keys, there's no telling. We go into the assistant principal's office. I walk in, she slams the door as hard as she could slam it, and the assistant principal's totally taken off guard. There was no like announcement that we're coming or anything. She's just at her desk like, what has this guy done, you know? And she just, just railing, putting me under the ground. And the assistant principal's just taking it all in and looking at me and taking it in, looking at me with that old dirty look and taking it in. I thought, man, now she's mad too. I'm done. I'm cooked. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden, Alabama podcast, where we're Southern storytellers. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mike.
I'm Drew.
I'm excited about this one today. We've got a great story. I think Drew's going to share it about how we met. We've got it's not romantic, but it is kind of a good story. So I'm going to let him share that, but they've driven across the river this morning to come to the Shedio.
And they said, hey, this is the Shedio?
They were so impressed with it.
Yes, they thought, really like the clock.
The clock is a
really
favorite.
Impressive.
Well, let's get to telling some stories. That's what people are here for. I think Mr. Mike's got a good one to lead us off.
We're down 22 points.
Where are you? Where are we in a gym, on a field?
We're in a gym at Gardendale High School.
There we go.
And we're probably 1994, 93, circa 1993, 94.
So we're playing. He's coaching Pinson Valley.
Head coach Pinson Valley basketball. We have a relatively young team. We're on the road playing Gardendale. And I look up in the third quarter, and we're down by 22 points with 2 minutes left.
I look up,
yeah. And hey, you know,
I was looking down for a reason.
Right? Somebody asked me, was I nervous? And I said, no, I was too busy praying to be nervous. But I look up, and so, you know, God helps you sometimes with intuition or a gut feeling. We're 22 down, so we got our attack team. And they were guys that were football players, competitors, not great athletes. And we talked about, guys, we're 22 down. And I told them, I said, go out and foul, dive, scrap, rebound, get possession, try to cut this lead in the last 2 minutes of the third quarter to maybe double digits, 10 or 12. Well, they do it. They hold. Grab, step on toes, get rebounds, throw in shots they've never made before. Into the third quarter, we're down 12. Okay, we put our starters back in, and we score. There's a lot of points in 8 minutes now, and I'm not sure y'all realize that. We scored 39 points in the fourth quarter, end up winning 109 to 102. And one of the great comebacks.
We were playing defense, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean.
109 to 102 in a high school basketball game.
Yes, and we ran a system. We called it the system, and we got that from Coach Paul Whitstead. If the facts checker's out there, he's called the guru of go. And it was super fast. And really, it's like Alabama plays now, except – you know, Coach Oates does all these analytics, points per possession, and always like IQ I had, that a 3 is more than 2.
Every day of the week.
Every day, I think. Now, you know, again, still I'm from East Lake and not real bright, but that was one of the great comebacks. That one, And again, a great experience, bittersweet at times. Coaching both our sons, mm-hmm. I would say, was something that was really, really special for us.
my son asked me last night, I said, "Daddy, why don't you coach?" I'm like, "Well, buddy, work first and foremost, but I don't know that our relationship would be near as good as what it is right now."
Well, I was at times restrained, and I'm going to get off on that one, and maybe Drew can tell some about playing for us.
Well, tell us one of your stories, Drew.
Well, you know, I think your dad touched on this, and it was fun, you know, having the privilege to play with my dad. And so there, you know, there's so many, I think about it, so many life lessons that, you know, you learn from it, some good, some bad. And I've got plenty of them that I can tell probably both ways. And so I'm going to tell, before I start telling these stories, I'm going to put a little disclaimer, is that the man I am today, I owe to my dad. Mm-hmm. And I think that, and so some of these stories you're going to tell, you're going to go, man, he was hard on him, but it was something that, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, and the way he raised us and taught us. And so, you know, dad taught us really to be, you know, I think about kind of three things. He was going to be, we're going to fear the Lord, and we're going to be in the church. And that was, at times we may not have always needed to be there based on, you know, the night before kind of thing, but dad made sure we were there and feared the Lord. He made sure we were going to work hard at what we do, and that we were going to be, we would work hard, play, you know, and really be good. Whatever you do be good at it. He was going to make sure we were tough, mentally and physically. And so that's where, that's my disclaimer as I get into these stories, but,
now you can rake him over the coals.
Yeah, so yeah. I've got
here
all
we
that.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got all that.
Here we go.
So let's go back. Let's call it, this is probably 1993, 94, somewhere in there. I know I was 12, I think.
I know I was 12, probably think. I mean, exactly when I was 12.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. I know exactly where, you know, when. So I was 12. And, you know, like today, you have all these travel basketball tournaments, club basketball, AAU, whatever you want to call them. Well, I was, you know, we had put together, that wasn't that common back in those days. But there was a guy that ended up, his son ended up being my high school teammate later on down the road, but he had put a little team together from kind of Northeast Jefferson County, Pinson, Trustful, Clay, Huffman, you know, that kind of area. And took us up to play in an AAU tournament up in the Shoals area,
Florence,
you know, somewhere. And so I don't remember where. I probably try to block that out, but, so we go up there and we play this game, and I think we ended up getting beat. We didn't play well. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, today in tournaments, you get the third place, silver, gold, bronze medal, and everybody gets rings as long as you don't lose the last game kind of thing. Well, in those days, you know, that wasn't the case. I mean, you lost and you were done. It was over. We'd go home, true tournament format. And so we lost. And I remember walking to the car, and one of the things that's always neat about him is, you know, when he's fired up, because you can see this little blood vessel right here in his forehead start to pop out. And so we had played the ball game, and I really remember kind of being a little bit sluggish, but don't really remember much about it. And we get in the car, and dad says to me, "Why don't you get out of the way of that charge?" I'm like, "Huh?" You know, about like any 12-year-old boy would respond, "Yeah, huh?" You know, whatever. And so, you know, he starts going back through. And so for those, you know, just to clarify what a charge is for non-basketball folks, you know, a charge is where you're on defense and basically let somebody run over you and you steal a possession. And so it's the ultimate sign of a team. It's the ultimate sign of sacrificing for your team. And that was one of the things that he was always big on. And so apparently, I don't recall this, I Olayed, you know, like a bullfighter, got out of the way of a charge that was coming at me.
You did.
Olay!
And so that apparently I did. So we get in the car, and, you know, he asked me the question. And of course, I respond, "I don't know. I don't remember it," you know. And, you know, he obviously that fueled it. And it was one of those situations where, you know, with your parents, you know, you're not going to be able to answer your way out of it. No matter what you say, it's going to be wrong, right? And it's going to just fuel the fire. And that just will, you mean you didn't care that much that you didn't even remember getting out of the way of the charge? And, you know, it just kind of built on it that way. Well, it was time to go eat. So one of the things that he believed in was toughening us up. And so that was a big deal of me getting out of the way of the charge. And so we get ready to go to the Pizza Hut parking lot. And, you know, my little sister, who was 7, I think, at the time, I think that's right, had her little baby doll with her. And so dad said, "Well, if you're going to not be tough enough to take a charge, you're carrying the baby doll in the Pizza Hut with me." So...
So 12 years old.
12 years old. So, you know, this is 1993, right? So
before cell phones, thankfully.
Before cell phones.
Yeah, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, before some of the, you know, the culture that's out there today. So all I can remember is there is no way I'm walking in this Pizza Hut with this baby doll. And I'm sitting here holding it in my hands and I'm looking at it going, man, there's no way I'm going to be able to explain it. Cell phone or not. I mean, the embarrassment of it was there. And I can remember going back and forth and I'm like, I'm not getting out of this car. And Dad's like, you're getting out of this car. And finally my older brother, who's 3 years older than me, so he's 15, looks over and says, Dad, don't make him take that thing in there. And I remember thinking, man, my brother's stepping up for me here, you know? But then I realize, and I look back on that now and go, yeah, he wasn't worried about me. He was worried about his little brother walking in there with a baby doll, you know, looking all funny. So, you know, take all that. That was how that ended. Got out of that. That was a rough ride home. But that stuck with me. So that was, there's always ways to teach lessons. And so...
Tell them the rest of the story.
And that's where I... Okay. So, you know, so...
There's more.
Yeah, so... Yeah. You know, what was ingrained in my 12-year-old mind at that point is no matter what, don't get out of the way of a charge. So fast forward, this is my sophomore year in high school, and I'm playing for him now. So he wasn't coaching that team. He was just a parent in the stands. I am playing for him at Pinson Valley. I'm a sophomore, 5'6", maybe 135 pounds, you know, small guy. But was kind of borderline whether I was ready to play varsity basketball or play another year of JV. And, you know, Dad having the just the wisdom of what to do said, hey, Drew, you can be probably seventh, eighth man on varsity or you can play JV, your call. And so I said, hey, I want to be on the varsity, you know. And so we were going to have a really good team. I was going to have a chance to play with my brother. So go through all practice. And so part of that is it's like, hey, I'm the youngest guy on the team. I'm the smallest guy on the team. You know, I have to be I have to be tough, you know, those kind of things. And so first ball game of the year, we're playing Moody at Pinson Valley's gym. And we're having a good game. We get up kind of big. So I'm getting a little more minutes than I probably would have normally gotten. But, you know, I was going to play probably 12, 16 minutes game, half a game, something like that. But I was getting a few more minutes. And this is in the latter part of the third quarter. So the game is starting to get, you know, a little bit further along. And Moody had these two guys. One guy was they were two brothers. They were 2 years apart. And the oldest brother, his nickname was Night Train. And he was a defensive lineman that had committed to play football at Alabama. Big boy. So had him, and he had a younger brother that similar build, similar stature. And so all that to say, you know, that's kind of setting it up is that and the way our offense was is the point guard, which is what I played, always got back on defense. So if somebody had a fast break, you were the first line of defense to stop them. And so that means I was going to be in a position to take a charge. Well, lo and behold, I don't remember which one of those two brothers got the ball, but it was Night Train or Night Train's little brother. And I can remember him coming down the floor.
Yeah.
And I can remember thinking, well, what am I going to do here? I've either got to stay here and take the hit or I'm going to be carrying baby doll back into Pizza Hut. So, so I take the hit. And it takes me, and so at Pinson Valley's gym, you have a stage on the end. And I can remember I lock onto the block, and the guy just plows over me, takes a hit, puts his knee right here in my sternum, knocks me to the ground, pushes me back. And I think my head almost hits the back of the stage right there at Pinson. I mean, I just slide back. I mean, it's, you know, 6'4", 250, and 5'6", 130. So, I mean, he's twice the man I am, you know. So I get knocked down to the floor and I look up and I lean my head over this way and I look and I see the referee do this, which was block charge. So I'm like, I thought, I didn't get out of the way. So there's, you know, no baby doll in Pizza Hut. Well, buddy of mine comes and helps me up, pulls me up and I lift up. And when he lifts me up, I say to him what I think about the call. Was not an appropriate word to use. And so Dad had a rule that if you got a technical, you didn't play and you were going to pay for it the next day at practice. Players didn't get technicals. And so just so happened that nice man in stripes happened to walk by right by at the same time that I did, or that I said that to my buddy and heard what I had to think about his call. Well, I look up and he blows the whistle and gives me the tee.
Teed up.
teed up. So I just immediately, and so the rule was you don't play. So I just immediately walked to the bench and sit down. So dad asked me, Drew, what'd you say? I told him. And dad said, well, gosh almighty, Drew, you're right. But you can't say that. And then a second later, he storms into the bench and says, you'll pay for this tomorrow at practice. So, and trust me, I did. I'll come back to that. But so the moral of all that is no matter what the pain is, don't get out of the way. I took the charge, but I ended up paying the price the next day at practice where I ended up. So dad at practice, I walk out, have my practice uniform on, hands me a heavy medicine ball and says, hey, give me a wall squats, or LSUs is what we called them. And I sat on the wall with that ball over my head like this. And he'd say, I'm tired of looking at you. Start running. And so, I mean, the whole practice. And so then I would run around the gym in circles. And he'd say, I'm tired of that. Squat on the wall. And so that's what I did for 2 hours of practice. And I think for the next three or four games, I couldn't shoot the ball because it was just, my arms were just dead tired. So moral of the story is that Baby Doll and Pizza Hut, you know, ended up costing me more pain of it all, I guess. But it was, so there's one of the fun stories that I had from playing ball with dad.
It was a privilege, and God blessed me by allowing me to get to coach our sons, even though we had some bittersweet moments, more sweet than bitter, though, really.
You know, I so admire that you coached Drew at the upper level. My dad coached me, you know, and he's a lot different coach than I was, but I really appreciated being able to play baseball and be there with dad. So many good memories. But Drew, you got one more memory with your dad.
Well, you know, the fun part of it was there was no favorites playing for him. And so, you know, you kind of have with coaches' kids, you kind of see it two ways. You know, you have one that gets to do everything, take all the shots, you know, play shortstop, whatever it is. And then you have the one that has to be, you know, has held to a higher standard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you that he was absolutely the hold you to the higher standard kind of coach. And so this is my senior year, and for whatever reason, my senior year of high school, I had the in my mind, I was going to be, if y'all go back into the Duke basketball days, I was going to be the next Bobby Hurley at Duke, you know, and I could look at him and go, you know, I roster heighted at 5'11", so that really means 5'9", right? So I added a couple inches to it, you know, 155 pounds. But whatever reason, I was going to be the next Bobby Hurley. My senior year was going to propel me to that, you know, hey, I'm going to get that offer, you know? So I go into the senior year really focused on, hey, I got to put up some stats. I got to have a good year, those kind of things. And, yeah, so to start the year, I start off terrible. I can't make a shot, can't hit a three, and I was known to be – I could shoot the ball fairly well. And then, you know, I think it's saying, give me the hook, right?
But yeah.
I was just struggling. And so I can remember coming in the day before we had won our first four games, and then – we were coming into the – and then we won our first three, lost our fourth game, and I played – pitifully. And so I can remember that we had a game the next night, and I can remember dad calling me in PE, or we were in the PE, and he was like, you're playing so bad, I'm not even going to talk to you in the basketball locker room. I won't talk to you in the PE locker room on the other side of the gym. So he takes me in there and he says, you're supposed to be a good shooter. You've worked hard, but look, you know, I got guys that are playing better than you. You're not going to start tonight. So, you know, as a guy that, you know, had kind of an ego and all that. And he said, you're going to have to put the team first. You're not going to, you know, so put the team first, and nobody's bigger than the team. So he doesn't start me that night. And so I can remember going home that night or before the game to get something to eat, you know, all that, get my uniform, get all ready to go. And I can remember, and I started trying to complain a little bit to my mom, like, man, I can't believe my dad's not going to start me. You know, I mean, I'm a senior, you know, that kind of thing. And my mom said, and you got to know my mom. She's just as level-headed, matter of fact. She says, well, guess you better start playing better. So I'm like, well, there you go. So remember driving to the school that night, you know, on the way. And for whatever reason, I take out my burnt CD and put it in my Kenwood player in my truck. And I,
yes.
You know, Kenwood. Yeah. You know, I've got my amp in the back with my, you know, my subs in the back, you know, normally listening to a little bit of 90s rap or, you know, maybe AC/DC, Metallica. No, for whatever reason, I'm going to flip in and I throw in Dixie Chicks, Wide Open Space. So there you go. So,
what?
If so that, so,
So what emotion were you trying to get with that?
I don't know.
So funny.
Well, and so anyways, I roll in there and I'm like, I'm going to show them. So I break out some white tube socks up to my knees. And in my mind that night, I said, he thinks I can't shoot the ball. I'm not going to shoot a single time tonight. And so roll out there. And I finally get in the game, and for whatever reason, they kept fouling me. And I kept going to the free throw line and shooting. And I made free throw after free throw after free throw. But I didn't, I never would shoot the ball. I was not going to take a single shot that night. And then finally, late in the game, I get a chance to step up. And I took one shot that night. And it was a shot to put us ahead. And I remember looking back at him like, see, I can still do it. But it was just his ability. And I say all that to say is that then the next game I'm back in the starting lineup. But I say all that to say is his way of his master motivation of mentally getting me back where I needed to be is what let him be such a successful coach for so long. I mean, it was 40 years of coaching across all areas. It's pretty cool to see.
I think the moral story there is when you really need a motivation, Dixie Chicks is the way to go.
When you're emotional about your poor performance, dial up the Dixie Chicks.
Let her eat.
And I wish I knew what was going through my head. And I couldn't tell that story without at least saying that. But I really feel like I need to probably get that baby doll back and, and give my man card to y'all.
No, so, hey, buddy, I love I love Dixie Chicks. I sing it all the time.
Yeah, by yourself in your truck, right?
By myself in the truck.
Well, buddy, you got to go.
I got to go. I'm speaking of coaching.
You got to go.
It's time.
A little baseball today.
Baseball game today.
Well, tell Big Cub to play well.
He's going to hit a home run. Maybe he won't have to tote a baby doll in the
pizza. Baby doll.
If he plays bad, you know what to do.
Yeah, don't. No, don't.
Give him 32 years later, he'll still remember it. I promise you that.
That's right.
Well, be careful, brother.
Yep.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show. Now, Mr. Mike, you coached, taught, and there's the athletic aspect, but there's also the scholastic aspect, and you've got a good one. So you had to be the coach in the scholastic side and as well. Tell me that story.
Well, our daughter, Anna, who is now a counselor, senior counselor at Mormon Jordan High School, was a freshman. And Drew had just graduated in the spring of 99. And I was in the gym teaching PE one day. And they sent a student over and said, Coach Dutton, they need you in the office. Your daughter is in there. And I thought, oh, me, what is going on here? And so I got somebody to cover my class, adult. Somebody came in, or maybe they may have sent somebody. So I kind of sprint to the main office at Pinson, go in the assistant principal. They said, Anna's in the assistant principal's office. And I go in, and she'd been sent to the office for violating the dress code. Her skirt was too short. And, I thought, how in the world did my wife, first of all, let her, who drove her to school? I had lunchroom duty, supervised the lunchroom where the students that got early. So I had to leave early and get to school early. So, when I got in there and they told me she was violating the dress code, which, I thought that wouldn't happen ever with my wife or with Anna, because Anna is, and my wife especially, a rule follower. And boy, it just hit me. I just thought, good. So I went into the mean dad mode, and I said,
that blood vessel in the forehead popping out.
But remember that.
I said, Anna, you go out and get in my truck, and I'm going to take you home, and we're getting you out of Pinson Valley High School. We're going to enroll you at Mortimer Jordan High School. We lived in the Mortimer Jordan zone in Mars. And I said, you'll go to Jordan. And they had a renowned disciplinarian principal, Jimmy Trotter. You've probably heard of Coach Trotter. And I said, he will make you behave. And I won't get called out of a class because you don't know how to dress. And I said, also, your mother and I are going to have a little meeting, too, about this, because she allowed you to dress that way, saw you walk into school. So We get in the truck. It's 7 miles from our house to Pinson Valley High School. So we had a little blue Nissan truck and sitting in there. And the whole way, you're going to Jordan. There's not another day you're going to spend at Pinson Valley High School because you can't follow the rules there. And I mean, I just saw I made it like she had committed the crime of the century. So we get home and I'm ranting and raving. She changes clothes. And I said, here we go. We're going down to Jordan. She is begging me, Daddy, please don't make me go to Morton Jordan. I want to go to Pinson. I love Pinson. And I said, well, I think you ought to go to Jordan. She said, please, Dad, no. So turn the car around. I said, okay, I'm going to let you have another chance at Pinson Valley High School and see if you can't follow the dress code. And so we drive on back to Pinson, get her reinstated. I don't think they had anything on her record or anything like that. And she turned out to have a great career there, was homecoming queen her senior year. So it worked out great. And little did I know, and Drew can chime in now.
So the other side of the story is I'm a freshman in college. And so I'm a freshman in college, and, you know, and I'm going to what we called at that time 13th grade or Harvard on the Hill, which was Jeff State. And you, when you get into college, you finally have the freedom of, hey, I don't feel like going to class. So for whatever reason on that day, I think it was a Thursday or a Friday, I was going to take a long weekend is what my plans were. And so I can remember, and we had just moved from our house in Center Point to Morris. And I can remember hearing the garage door open, and I can hear him just in one of those, the voice of he's not happy. And I can remember I'm laying in my bed. This is probably 8:30. I'm supposed to be in class, and I can hear him just wearing my sister out, and I can hear my sister kind of crying. And I remember laying in bed just straight as I could be, like, I'm not making a move because maybe he won't realize that I'm skipping class. Never realized until years later that I was still at home that whole time skipping class. So I dodged the bullet on that one, thanks to my sister.
Timing, life and timing. How do those situations happen? What's the chances? You were good.
That's like, the first time I'd ever skipped a class.
I mean, and he was never going to be home in the middle of the day. He was never going to do that. I'm telling you, the Lord does those things. I'm convinced.
And that was one of the few times I think I skipped class again, probably. So it's one of those, it was like the Lord, like, as you said, Philip, the Lord taught me a lesson on that one, I think.
I'm disappointed about that story, though. Well, not the story, though. I'm disappointed in Drew. But I can understand how you made the mistake. Why did you take an 8 o'clock college class?
Well, it was my freshman year.
There's your mistake.
And I think it was one that I wasn't really. I hadn't educated myself on how to be better at that point. So,
let me take you to Montgomery, to a young 18-year-old college student, Auburn University of Montgomery. I didn't know anything about college. Didn't know anything about anything. Literally took zero research into it. Well, I go down there for new student day because back then there's no online registration. There's none of that. It's non-existent. You had to go physically, and we go, and it's a whole day. And supposedly at the end of the day, you would register for your classes. I had not thought about what classes I might need to take. I had not thought about anything.
Playing baseball, right?
I mean, that's me. I was down there to play baseball, and that was it. Well, I sat through that whole day, and at the end of the day, it was my turn. They had us in groups to go and register for classes. Well, I went up there, and the lady said, "Where's your sheet?" And I said, "What sheet?" She said, "You're supposed to have filled out the classes that you want to take." I said, "Oh, you don't just tell us, or there's not some sort of plan that you just sign up as a freshman and take classes?" She said, "No, you've got to write down the classes you're going to take, the numbers, the times, and you get to pick." I was disappointed and happy at the same time. I was disappointed that I had to do that. I was happy that I got to pick exactly what I wanted. Well, there was one guy down there that I knew in all of the new student orientation because he went to Hayden, but he was a sophomore. He had graduated in 99. I went and found him, and he started trying to recruit me for a fraternity. And I was like, "No, I don't want to be recruited for a fraternity. I'm a baseball player, and I just need to know, how do you register for these classes and how do you know what to take?" That's how dumb I was. And he said, "Well, I don't know what you're going to do, but you probably need to take an English, an elective, and two other classes. And I said, all right. And I got the catalog out, picked the first ones that I came to. The first English class, the first, I think it was art appreciation, and two other classes. And I took them. And I had no idea. I took 8 o'clock classes. And not only did I do that mistake, I picked to go on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. I had no idea that I could pick 9 to 2 Mondays and Wednesdays. And then you have the 4-day weekend every weekend. But that's the two things about that story. One, ignorance and bliss. Two, that with just a little bit of research, you could really set your life up to be pretty nice when you get in college.
Got to plan ahead, though.
You got to plan ahead. Before we move on, I want to talk about a great memory that you brought up, Mr. Mike, about the assistant principal office. Like your daughter, I knew what I was supposed to do at school, how I was supposed to act, and I knew that I better not ever have to go to the principal's office. And I did pretty good. But there's something about when you become a senior and you're a male, you just don't have a lot of frontal brain activity. Well, we had a Spanish teacher that could be a little bit difficult to deal with. And we were in there cutting up one day, which was disrespectful.
Can I interject something on that one?
Please.
So Spanish teacher is the same one that sent my sister home with the dress code. So I think that's just, I think that's part of being the Spanish teacher. I think.
Maybe it, we may have a correlation there. Well, we were cutting up in there one day and she just railed on us and demoralized us. And there's the ego piece coming in. And I thought, you know what? I've had enough. So I was sitting there and she said something and I just smarted off just like that. Loud. Everybody could hear it. It was an open proclamation. And she marched, took long steps, as Brother Robin says, over to my desk, grabs me by the shirt and said, that's it. That's enough. You're going to the principal's office right now. And I thought, wow, we just went past paddling, which is usually what that was first step. Nobody got notified, got paddling, moved back to class and you're done. That was kind of what I was used to. But that we blasted right past that. And she is marching me all the way to the assistant principal's office. And I thought, man, this is bad. This is not, I'm going to get wore out when I get home, may take my keys. There's no telling. We go into the assistant principal's office. I walk in. She slams the door as hard as she could slam it. And the assistant principal's totally taken off guard. There was no like announcement that we're coming or anything. She's just at her desk like, what has this guy done? You know? And she just, just railing, putting me under the ground about all the things that I had done, what I said, and how disrespectful, and I needed to be suspended, and this, that, and the other. And the assistant principal's just taking it all in and looking at me and taking it in, looking at me with that old dirty look and taking it in. I thought, man, now she's mad too. I'm done. I'm cooked, as the kids say now.
Over.
And as she's landing the plane on my scathing rebuke, the assistant principal just looks at her and says, I have everything that I need. I'm satisfied. You can go on back to your class. I'm sorry for what he's done. And she said, okay. And gives me that, look. She walks out the door, closes the door. And the assistant principal looks at me. She says, now, Philip, you know how to act better than that. I felt like I had taken a shower. I felt clean. I mean, like, it just like I had a fresh aroma, in that moment. And she said, you're going to have to sit in here for probably another 5 or 10 minutes. But just try to not smart back to her when you go back to class, if you would. And if she says anything, just let her know that I handled it. I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that was the ultimate showing of grace that I ever got in school. What the Spanish teacher didn't know is that the assistant principal has always really liked me. Always. But the cool part about it, she didn't let on. You would have thought she was furious at me, and I thought she was. But it was all an act to give me that grace. And speaking of grace, we're not going to get the sermon. The scripture time comes in a minute. But the ultimate showing of grace is this Sunday at Easter.
Amen.
Amen.
Because Jesus Christ has given us excellent grace. I'm not going to get ahead, but I thought that was, Amen. You know, because what is grace? Not getting a punishment you deserve.
Yes.
That day, I deserved to be suspended at least 3 days because it's totally disrespectful. I needed to be suspended, but she gave me complete grace. No suspension, no punishment, even though that I deserved it. But Drew, I think you got another one.
Well, similar to kind of building on that is that this was sophomore history. And, you know, again, you were talking about full frontal lobe not being fully developed. So I'm a sophomore boy sitting in history, which I actually liked history. But we sat in alphabetical order. And so A, B, C, D, you know, is where I sat at. And so I was about halfway back on the front row or the first kind of set of desk in the classroom in history. Fantastic history teacher, Mr. Saxon, and did a great job. Could just stand up and just rattle off history facts. It was either world history or American history. I can't remember which one it was, but I was a 10th grader. Sitting in class, and, you know, there's the phrase sophomoric humor, right? And so I can remember sitting there, and we were discussing Battle of the Bulge. And I can remember looking at the teacher, and, you know, I'm just dialing it all in. Well, the guy in front of me makes a very poor comment referencing the battle. Well, Mr. Saxon thinks it's me, grabs me up, snatches me out, takes me into the hallway, and guess who he calls? Oh, what we called Iron Mike.
Iron Mike.
Baby. Iron Mike. So, you know, and again, takes me down to the principal's office, and I can remember sitting in the principal's office. So let me back up. The teacher didn't call the principal or called him. The principal ended up. But I can remember sitting in the principal's office, and he would roll his neck like this, and he said, "Now, Drew, when I tell your daddy, what does he think you're going to do? Or what do you think he's going to do?" I said, "Well, yeah. He's going to tell me." So we, at the time, lived in Centerpoint, and so I was supposed to go to Irwin, but because of him, I was at Pinson. And so he said, "Well, I think he's going to probably just send me back to Irwin's probably what's going to happen, and I really don't want that to happen." Well, he calls old Mike in, and old Iron Mike in, and, you know, it just continues for the beat down. But it's there was no grace in my circumstance of that, and there was more punishment coming for that. But that was the way he operated was guilty until proven innocent. And unfortunately, I was never proven innocent in this, but I was still guilty even if I was proven innocent. And so that's the way, there was no grace in this circumstance. I took the punishment and the wrath to build on Easter for somebody else that should have been in trouble. So
you didn't get out of that.
No. So I was full punished. I got grounded. I think at that time I'd already started driving. It was the latter part of my sophomore year, no keys. I mean, it was, you know, detrimental to me for something I never said. And
the guy that said it never stood up and looked out
for
you.
No, he was a teammate on the basketball team too. So no, he never did. So never confessed to it. So
what was the punishment?
Grounded, school wise, nothing.
They didn't do anything to you.
So that was the beauty and the bad part of being in school with him is that they knew, the teachers knew. Some of them thought it was funny to go, "Hey, Coach Dutton," and see how mad he would get. And they'd make stories up just to get us and just to see how he'd react. But the principal knew, "Hey, the easiest thing for me to do here is just call his dad and it'll be, it's handled." And so it was handled.
That is an easy out.
Yeah. It was, and that was the easy part for us.
He didn't have to swing the paddle. He didn't have to figure out how many days to suspend you in school suspension, nothing. He just said, "I'm calling Iron Mike."
Yep, Iron Mike. On speed dial. I can remember him walking over to the intercom, you know, back in those days with the intercom, and pushing the button into the gym and saying, "Coach Dutton, can you come to the office?" And I went. I mean, I could hear his footsteps in my head almost walking from the gym down the hallway. And I'm like, here we go.
A lot of people don't know that I'm a pastor, and even more people don't know how I got into ministry. But that's what ties Drew and I together. So, Drew, you wanted to share that moment.
Yeah, you know, one of the neat things is, you know, when you're in church and you're asked to serve on different roles, you sometimes kind of wonder, at least I have, of, hey, is this really making an impact for the kingdom? Are we seeing, you know, you want to see fruits in a lot of cases. And I think that's just natural tendencies. You want to see the results of the work that you put in. And I think that's, you know, sometimes you don't. And especially in the you know, in a serving world in the church or serving in the church, you may not necessarily see it. But so I go back to the summer of 2019, and our pastor, Brother Randy Cater at the time, now Dr. Randy Cater, had come to our personnel team. And at the time I was serving on our personnel team and said, you know, I really think our church needs a children's and families minister, and we want it to be full time. And we're a small, you know, relatively small church, not, you know, too small, but, you know, have a decent budget, but not, I mean, we're in a small town, not a huge budget. And so it's like, we knew there was going to be, you know, trouble in finding the money and things like that to bring somebody on full time, but we knew the Lord would provide. And so we had prayed about it and then started receiving resumes in over the course of that summer and doing interviews. And we had plenty of people that were experienced that maybe were out of our budget, but then had some that were within it, but just didn't seem to really fit. And at the time I had a, you know, two young kids that would be in kind of the children's ministry. And so I really, you know, knew what was going to be, it felt like I had a good feel for what would be the connection on it. And we had interviewed several people and really just struggling to find the person that the group at all really felt like was a good fit. So fast forward into the fall of 2019, and we're still searching and taking resumes and just not making progress. And we received a ton of different resumes and, you know, looked through them and just, you know, again, hadn't really found anybody that stood out. And I can remember our office manager calling me in the middle of that and saying, "Hey, Drew, there's a guy calling the church office that sent his resume in that really is really interested in this job." And she said, "Please call him back." And I'm like, "Well, send me his resume real quick. Let me look at it." And I look at it and I see, you know, nursing, hospital management, you know, and I'm like, what's here? So I'm like, okay, whatever. And so I kind of shelved it and kind of went about my week. And then Friday afternoon, I'd finished the you know, 2+ day company meeting that we had, and I'm driving home and I'm ready for the week just to be over. Office manager calls me again, "Drew, this guy really wants to talk to you. Please call him." I'm like, okay, I'll call him. So call this guy named Philip, and I'm like, man, I'm going to sit here and this guy's going to, and I'm like, this is just not going to be the right, it's just not going to work out. You know, it just doesn't make sense. You know, we're looking for somebody with some experience, you know. So call this guy named Philip, and man, we just start talking. And it was like, hey, I had left the Sheraton downtown and was driving up to Locust Fork where I live. And I can remember, you know, I call him and like, we were friends. I mean, it connected. And I can remember thinking, okay, the Lord is in this. And after talking with Philip, I thought, man, the Lord is really working on him to make a massive career change that just doesn't make sense. And, you know, looking back on it, I think about, you know, 1 Samuel, where you have David being anointed, and it didn't make sense when Samuel anointed David. He was even left out in the field. And you think, man, what is the Lord doing here? But it was neat to see, and I can remember pulling into my driveway at home after I talked to Philip the whole 45-minute ride home, and I called our pastor, Dr. Cater, and I said, "Randy, we've got our guy." And he kind of just laughed at me and just almost dismissed me a little bit, like, whatever, Drew, I don't, you know, but I knew it. And I knew at that time that Philip was our guy to be the children's and family minister for us. And so ended up lining up an interview. Philip came in, and I can remember the process of seeing the Lord work in Philip's life through that, and really Philip and Bethany, because I can remember vividly sitting in our conference room at Locust Fork Baptist Church, and we're crowded in there, and we had brought Bethany in to talk through all this and thinking about the massive change that would take place from going from, you know, secular service into, you know, ministry. And just what that was going to do financially for the family and just a drastic change. And I can remember seeing the look in Philip's face of, the Lord's doing something here and I'm not going to back away from it. And I can remember seeing the concern in Bethany's face, but I know when Philip's committed, he's going 100 miles an hour that way. And so it was neat to see your obedience in that and then see the fruits that came out of it. And then for me personally, you know, a year or so later, my son Hunter was in the, Haley, my daughter, was already a believer, but my son Hunter, who was in the ministry, was struggling to really understand, why do I need to follow Jesus? And, you know, or, and not why, but just really understanding. And I can remember Philip coming to the house, and me, Philip, and Hunter were all having a conversation, and Philip sits before him and paints this picture of the bridge that Jesus gives us from separation of God because of our sins and the valley that's there that you can't cross. And then Jesus gives us that bridge to salvation. And I can remember Philip talking through that with Hunter and watching the lights just go off in Hunter's eyes of like, I need that. Mm. And, you know, for me, that was the point where it was so cool to go back and remember how the Lord was working and all the different things that were going through your life to then go, man, to see the fruits pay off of obedience of a man. And then also a circumstance that didn't really make a lot of sense to me, on paper or on a resume, but the Lord made sense of it all. Yes. So, for me, it's something that is, you a lot of times do the back office work of the church or things in the church that maybe, sometimes you kind of, as I said earlier, you don't see the fruits of it, or you kind of understand and, you know, look, being a part of the personnel and stuff like that, you make decisions that you regret or wish you'd have done differently or said things differently. But that's one that just seeing the Lord work in your life. And I can remember the conversations we were having where you were down to the penny on spreadsheets of, hey, can I make this work financially? And the commitment you made, and then seeing how it blossomed within our church and really a thriving children's program that didn't exist, now exists, and all the young families. And I'm fortunate enough to teach your Sunday school class now that you were teaching when you left. So it was just an experience for me personally that's one that I'll always hold on to on that side of it, because it just really showed how the Lord gets the glory for what he does in our lives. And it was just really neat to see. And then it personally, I get to benefit from that.
That's a beautiful memory that I've not thought about in a while. But as you told the story, I went back into your home and got to relive that again. And that is really, there's nothing like, and I didn't understand this for a long time, and this is a word for y'all out there today, because some of y'all may be struggling. There's nothing like working for the Lord. There's nothing like it. And I mean, I was sitting over here just chill bumps all over, just thinking back to that moment. And we like to say that, every successful person that we deem successful had a clear path to where they are, and they knew what they were going to do, and they took every step towards it. That is probably one of the biggest distruths that there is. And we look at situations and go, well, I can't see how it can work out, so therefore it isn't going to work out. God can do anything with anything. He don't need anything to do something.
We're blessed just to be a part of it.
And so that's a beautiful story. And so if you're struggling with that, if you know for a fact that God's calling you to do something, you can't see how it's going to work out, I hope this will be an encouragement for you, that I didn't see how it would work out either. The financial spreadsheets, they didn't work out, but God worked it out. And we never went without, and he blessed us above and beyond. But we have a special blessing to kind of, as our final story today, Mr. Mike has a real powerful testimony he's going to share with us.
I may get emotional.
That's fine.
This in some ways, because difficult time that we went through, our family went through. I went through, I had to use that singular pronoun, but we'd finished basketball season at Pinson. I didn't feel right. I felt like I was tired. Just didn't feel, energy. I was running 3 miles a day, but really struggling, especially walking up stairs or hills. Dr. Walter Wilson, and again, I'm not going into great, great detail, but he said, Mike, we need to schedule a colonoscopy. Something is not right. I don't feel good. Something's going on. I think you may be bleeding internally. So do the colonoscopy, get prepped. You know how people know that's agony. I don't wish that on anybody, but get the anesthesia out. Well, as I'm waking up, I still, and this woke me totally awake, Dr. Malik telling my wife, Mrs. Dutton, Mr. Dutton has colon cancer. We checked it. It's no question it's colon cancer. He has a large cancer in his bowel, colon. And he said he needs to have surgery. This was March 22nd, 2004. I'll never forget that day because, you're used to hearing about somebody else having cancer. And when the doctor tells your wife that, I mean, it got me out of the effects of the anesthesia just like that. And mentally, oh, man, it just, you know, I'd been running. I thought I was in good shape. But I was anemic, too. I mean, I was bleeding from the cancer internally. So immediate surgery a week later, March 29th, 2004. After that, they let me recover from the surgery, July 04, 7 months of chemo. Tough. I mean, tough, tough, tough. I'm no hero, but it was very unpleasant. I was blessed, though. I didn't lose my hair. Very little side effects from the chemo, except I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to see food. Lost weight, weak, but go through that. And then that summer, they do a CAT scan, okay? It started off at stage 3. Summer, stage 4, they saw 4-5 spots on my liver. I just was devastated in a lot of ways psychologically, but I was praying and praying and praying. Well, after 7 months of chemo, they waited 3 months. In May of 05, they do a radio frequency ablation on my liver, and they go in and they find that there's only one cancerous spot. They get it. Then back to my oncologist for visits, CAT scans, blood work, cancer equivalent test. And then after about 3 years of that, going one day, Dr. Shaley Lockenpaul, probably the finest human being in terms of just patient care and bedside manner I've ever met, he said, "Mike, the only time I want to see you again is when you come visit us. Your tests, your blood work, your scans, there's no cancer anywhere." And he said, "Just come see me." And I mean, that you talk about a blessing. Mm. I mean, God just intervened in my opinion. It was nothing. I mean, when you're told you've got metastatic colon cancer to the liver, and you were talking about pancreatic cancer. We spoke a while ago. It was a devastating time. But the thing that God blessed me with, too, was family, support, friends, encouragement. When you're going through that, and if people out there that are maybe watching this have somebody going through those things, encouragement. And I thought, you know, I've read the Son of Encouragement, Barnabas. And I kept telling myself, if I get through this, I'm going to try to do everything I can to be more encouraging in every aspect. And I've gone so far away from the Lord at times, but that has drawn me back so much and just couldn't have done it without God and the strength through a family support and great physicians. But the great physician Amen. Is the one that, I think, just spared my life. And it's just, it's hard to believe that's 21 years ago and I'm still here and able, Lord willing, go out and get a 2-mile walk in later today and just been blessed.
He had a plan, and that's yeah. one of my biggest takeaways from it. And I got one more question for you. God spared you. God healed you. But in that, you have worked for the kingdom. You have continued to work for him and pursue what you can do for him in this new lease in life. And that's powerful.
Well, it's God is helped. I mean, just, I can't say in my East Lake vocabulary what he's allowed me to do that before this, I would never do. I didn't have confidence enough to teach a Sunday school class. I would, you know, I just didn't think I was worthy or anything. I didn't have the desire to listen to preachers like John MacArthur. I really enjoy. I've got two of his study Bibles and studying it. Just like I said, I've wandered, felt so far away from the Lord at times. And I mean, now I want to finish strong.
Amen.
Finish strong on this. At 80, you know, the sands in an hourglass are not many at the top. There are a lot more at the bottom. Yeah. And So, but just wanted to finish strong and try to do everything. And again, I would like to use singular pronouns, but I can do to help further God's kingdom.
I got one question. We're not a practical podcast. We're not here to give advice or anything like that. This is a little bit out of character for us, but I think that we may have an opportunity today because I know cancer touches a lot of lives, and I guarantee somebody watching this has been impacted or is currently along either in the fight or along somebody in the fight. So with all you've been through, I think you have the credibility to say this, but as somebody going through that battle, getting all the bad news, going through the treatments, all those things, if you could give one bit of advice for a caregiver, what is the biggest thing a caregiver can do for somebody in the fight?
Well, one of the great, great blessings of my life is my wife, Peggy Drew's mom and Miles' mom, Anna's mom. She was fantastic as a caregiver. Never whining, never complaining, and she really took care of me. When the colon surgery, it was almost like a fish was gutted where they cut me. Mm-hmm. And I had all sorts of bandages. She was there encouraging me, said, you're going to be okay. She, you know, brought me water, just things like that. But positive. Be positive if you're a caregiver like that, because as we maybe allude to earlier, cancer, when it's on you or in you, is such a devastating word and blow to not only your physical part, but the mental. And again, positive and talking about the Lord and having faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And you know, some of those stories don't end like mine. And again, God's given me the opportunity to go and talk to people that are going through chemo, and have some now that I have a friend that's wife is going through it, and we talk. And again, I think just encouragement, Barnabas like attitude, the son of encouragement. I think just try to be positive and talk about the Lord and accepting Jesus Christ. And then you don't have any worries really in a lot of ways, because you know that you're going to be spending time in glory forever.
You'll be healed one way or the other on this side of the net. Yes. You're going to be healed if you've got Jesus Christ. And I think that's the best segue that we possibly could have had to the scripture time. So be an encouragement. That's the biggest takeaway. Mr. Mike said, you know, be there for them, be an encouragement. And I know that if this airs on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday as it's supposed to, that means that Easter was a few days before that. But I didn't want to assume that everybody watching got to hear the Easter story on Sunday. Maybe you couldn't make it. Maybe you just didn't want to go, but you still want to know what it is. Well, it's not about painted eggs, and it's not about bunny ears. It's about Jesus Christ and the greatest victory that was ever won. And so we're going to read Matthew 28, 1 through 18, a little bit lengthy, but I think this is something that'll bless you. And let me take my hat off. Matthew 28, verses 1 through 20. Early on Sunday morning, as the new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went out to visit the tomb. Suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, rolled aside the stone, and sat on it. His face shone like lightning, and his clothing was as white as snow. The guards shook with fear when they saw him, and they fell into a dead faint. Then the angel spoke to the women. Don't be afraid, he said. I know you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come see where his body was lying. And now go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead and he is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. Remember what I have told you. The women ran quickly from the tomb. They were very frightened, but also filled with great joy, and they rushed to give the disciples the angel's message. And as they went, Jesus met them and greeted them, and they ran to him, grasped his feet, and worshiped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go tell my brothers to leave for Galilee, and they will see me there." As the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and told the leading priests what had happened. A meeting with the elders was called, and they decided to give the soldiers a large bribe. They told the soldiers, "You must say Jesus' disciples came during the night while we were sleeping, and they stole his body. if the governor hears about it, we'll stand up for you so you won't get into trouble. So the guards accepted the bribe and said what they were told to say. Their story spread widely among the Jews, and they still tell it today. Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some of them doubted. Jesus came and told his disciples, "I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." That is a very encouraging, the most encouraging story, is that Jesus proved everything that he said he was, the Son of God, the only way to salvation. And he proved all that, because I can say that, but I can't prove it. But Jesus proved it when he got out of that tomb and he overcame death and proved everything that he said was true, and allows us to have living proof that we can believe in what he said, that we can believe in him, confess him as Lord, ask for forgiveness, have a relationship with him, and have eternal life. And that's how it is. That's how you become a Christian. That's how you have salvation, is you have the faith inside. You believe that it's true. And then you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord. And Romans tells us that then we'll be saved. But what I want to give you is some practical advice, or not my advice, but what we see in this text is there was a key phrase or key thing that was commanded throughout it, from the angel at the tomb all the way to Jesus at the end. And they had the same message: go and tell. Yeah. Go and tell. The angel told that to both Marys, and what did they do? They ran, mm-hmm. they went, and they told. When Jesus had all the disciples there, that was his final message: go and tell. So this Easter, yes, celebrate. Yes, call out to the Lord. But the same message is true, because that's the Great Commission, and all of us, every Christian today, has the same application: go and tell of the good things that the Lord has done.
Yeah, every time you read the Easter story, what a powerful one. And I think the way you summed it up, Philip, go tell. As a believer, you know, I think oftentimes we need to be more active in telling. And then the other part is to go make disciples as well. And so powerful message and challenge as we head into Easter.
All right, well, let's sum it up with one of my favorite times, the 60-second story challenge. And it's hard to tell a story in 60 seconds, but it usually is kind of fun because you got to get to the point. And so, Mr. Meyer, I think you've got one. This is going to be on your most favorite food or best eating time.
Best meal, okay. Kind of the deal. Alabama, Auburn, Georgia football game, Athens, Georgia, Bo Jackson senior year. Auburn fans and friends asked me to go, Sanford Stadium. Great time. We leave the stadium. It took like about 3 hours to get out, it seemed like. Get to Atlanta. We go to a Chili's. Never had eaten at Chili's at that time. Man, and I was starving to death. And they had this chili appetizer, some of the best I've ever had, did some of the best hamburgers I've ever eaten. And again, I think it was just because I was famished, hungry, but a great day. And even though I'm the big Auburn fan, I got to share that. I'm a big Alabama fan. Excuse me.
Whoa. I was going to say, we made a big change.
Please
here,
edit so. That. I'm a big Alabama fan, but had a wonderful opportunity to spend time with our friends that day. But great food. First time to eat at Chili.
They do back ribs.
Yes.
Chili's.
And if your Chili's isn't a sponsor, they should be now.
Yeah, that's right.
They got a little free play there.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the best time I've eaten is recently. And you know, we had talked about colonoscopies and all that, and I think one of the worst things so I had the privilege or the pain of going through that recently, and I can remember going that 24-hour period without eating. And I can remember going to the hospital, stomach rumbling for multiple reasons, and finally getting that over with. And I can remember leaving Grandview Medical Center, and I love breakfast food. And there's a First Watch, which is, you know, fantastic breakfast restaurant. So there's another advertisement that I can remember going to, and that food could not hit the table quick enough. And man, when it hit there, all the eggs, bacon, omelet, just everything I could stomach, just pounded it as quickly as I could. Phenomenal. You know, good breakfast food, probably not as good as it tasted that that morning after that. You know, nice procedure done.
Awesome. All right, you got the timer ready for me. I'm not going to – I'm going to give a – is it – favorite's a hard thing to say, but I'm going to give y'all a little tip, and I'm getting no compensation for this, but I'm going to bless your lives real quick. You ready?
Yes. Let's do it.
Everybody's familiar, not everybody, but most people are familiar going to the hunting club. When you're down at the hunting club, it's usually Little Debbie cakes and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Well, we had had enough of those. We said, we're going to go to this steakhouse in Livingston called Diamond Jim's and Miss Donald's.
Oh, I know Diamond Jim's.
Well, we loaded up, drove there, and I knew immediately that we were in a good spot for two reasons. The parking lot was so full, you couldn't even drive in it. Nothing but Z71 four-wheel drive Chevrolet pickup trucks. Second thing, there was so much smoke rolling out the back that you thought the place was on fire. So they're cooking this beef. We go in there, king cut ribeye, twice baked potato. You know, you never know what you're going to get with a steak. You just never know.
No.
They pulled that bad boy out on a plate. It was all the plate when it dominated the plate. And I said, man, steaks this big can't be. They're usually not that good. First bite. And I didn't breathe until the last bite was taken. Mm. I'm going to tell you, if you want a fine piece of beef, Diamond Jim's and Miss Donna's in Livingston, Alabama.
Very good.
Mm. Well, I've had a lot of fun with you guys today. Was it as good as that steak at Diamond Jim's? May have been a little better. You blessed me, Mr. Mike. Your story, your guy's story is a huge one, man. And that was encouraging. And I know that it's encouraged somebody. I know that it has.
Thank you.
And not only am I proud that, you know, you touched Jesus' hem, his garment that day, was healed, but I'm proud that that was not the end. You have used that and you've glorified the Lord and you've built his kingdom with the time that he's extended your life. I'm thankful.
God be the glory.
I just want to formally tell you guys, you blessed me, and I'm thankful that you were here today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having us.
Yes, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
But that's going to do it today at the Hayden, Alabama Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Mike.
I'm Drew.
We'll see you next time.